The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone, and welcome back. And perhaps we can start again, if you'd like, with some questions. If you have any questions or reports about how it's going with the meditation, that'd be a good way to begin. Any questions about the instructions from last week and trying to apply it? No challenges with your meditation? Just it's easy. Yes, please.
I had a personal question. I wanted to know, at what age did you enter the monastery?
They really entered the monastery. They're going to live in the monastery. I did when I was 26.
26? I found out last week they have a cap on age. 45.
Where?
Almost all over.
Not in Buddhist monasteries.
Buddhist and Benedictine.
No, not the Buddhist monasteries I stayed in.
I only found one in Iowa.
you could go. I've been to many Buddhist monasteries where people who were, 70s, 80s,
entering,
became monks. Yeah.
In California.
Yeah, in California you can go to Tassajara, Zen monastery in the Carmel Valley. It takes a while to get there. You can't just show up at the gate, but you can go there at any age. There's lots of people of all kinds of ages. Green Gulch, which is a kind of a Zen monastery in Marin County. My wife just came back from spending 3 weeks there at a retreat, and she said, in the morning when we had to do the liturgy, chanting liturgy, the Zen chants, you should have seen all the reading glasses came out. there were most of the people were gray hair. And I don't think age is really an issue.
Okay.
There might be an issue some places, but I know it might be true. I don't know about Catholic monasteries, but there might be some places, but all the places I've been to, it was not an issue.
It reminded me of the military. I mean, you get in there, they want you to carry your own weight. They want to make sure that you're healthy, that et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I can understand their position, but...
Yeah, most it depends on the Buddhist monastery. But in general, Buddhist monasticism is a very different flavor than Christian monasticism. And Christianity, I don't know it that well, but I associate much more with you go to a monastery and live there maybe for a lifetime. Whereas in Buddhist monasticism, it's much more of a transient lifestyle. Most traditionally, you might get ordained, and you're supposed to spend 5 years with the teacher who ordained you, getting trained. But once you finish that five-year training period, you're free to wander around. You don't have to stay in the monastery. Okay. You have to live by the monastic rules, but you don't have to stay put in the monastery. And there's actually, traditionally in Buddhism, the monks and nuns will spend a lot of time wandering around, traveling. We call them monks, but maybe shouldn't really be called. If you call them monks like we call Christian monks, it's not quite the same species.
Okay, thank you.
Could you talk a little bit about how the practice of yoga works with the practice of meditation?
Some people consider the meditation we do a form of yoga. And it's in our tradition, there's a custom of calling retreatants, people who go on retreats, yogis. So there's a kind of strong connection that way. But in terms of what it's a big topic, the whole question. There's been books written about the relationship between Buddhism and yoga. Depends what you mean by yoga. If you mean Patanjali's yoga, then there's a lot of similarities. And people, again, have written books comparing Patanjali and what he was trying to do there with Buddhism. If you're talking about Hatha yoga as a physical discipline, it can be very supportive of meditation practice, because and sometimes I think actually for people who live busy, frantic, stressful lives, it might be more efficient, more useful to do some yoga than to sit down and meditate sometimes, because the return is much faster in terms of de-stressing and kind of clearing out. Most retreats that we teach, like up at Spirit Rock, we have a yoga teacher who comes in and teaches yoga every day, once or twice a day as part of the retreat, because it's so helpful and supportive for it all. So that's all I would like to say now. They complement each other beautifully, and there's no need to hold them in opposition until you get to some of the higher reaches of both paths. And then it's a big question, are the higher reaches of both the yogic path and the Buddhist path the same, are they different? And that's a big topic.
I think I was referring more to the latter, the hatha yoga practice, because I try to practice every day, and I was wondering how to effectively sequence both, and should the hatha practice, does it help to do that first and then meditate, or I just kind of explore and whatever
it's a good question, and I'd like to answer the question with take advantage of your question and say something very important for this whole Buddhist enterprise, the whole mindfulness practice, is that you're meant to be your own teacher in this. And so what I do here is I try to give you some of the basic territory and the basic ideas, and how those ideas, how those practices get implemented in your life, the details of it all, it's best discovered through trial and error. And through trial and error, you become your own teacher. You find out for yourself. So it might be that for 1 week you do the yoga first and then meditate. The next week you do the meditation first and then the yoga. And then you compare and see what was most useful for you, beneficial. And that way you find out your own way, what's best for you. I think it would be really be disrespectful, or wouldn't really respect how unique each person is, for me to say, oh, the way to do it is always have a cup of coffee first. You know, maybe. But, you know, this is the way it should be done. But rather to give you kind of the range of options, and then you find your own way with that.
Thank you.
Okay. You know, if someone grew up far from any body of water and pools and anything, and never knew that people could swim, and they took them to the edge of a great lake or the edge of a great ocean or something, and someone said, oh, just go in, you can swim, they wouldn't believe them. It's not possible. How could you do that? And it's just a very foreign idea. But then perhaps with some real care, someone teaches them how to float and how to swim, and they're amazed it can be done. And it's not only can be done, but how wonderful it is to be out there floating. Meditation is a little bit like this, that we can spend a lifetime involved in discursive thinking and conversations are had, living in images and ideas, and we kind of almost like the world of our inner world sometimes of thoughts can be more real than the world, external world. And it's inconceivable that there's any other possibility. The world of thinking can be so important for people that people think they are their thinking. That only by thinking do they really know who they are. Partly because some people actually build up a sense of self, build up their sense of understanding, their orientation to the world through their thinking. By talking to themselves and saying, well, I'm better than someone else, I'm this way, I'm worse than someone else, I'm a person of this kind of background, I can prove myself this way or that way, I tell a story about myself. And these stories we tell about ourselves, they're very important. And so the only way you can know that you're that person is by retelling yourself the story. And so for many reasons, there's a lot of discursive thinking and becomes a very strong habit. And it can seem like a completely foreign idea, impossible idea, that there's value in not being engaged in discursive thinking. I mean, how could it? And for someone who's always spent their life in discursive thinking, it can be inconceivable there's something different than that. or that which is different than that can seem like some kind of great void or frightening emptiness, or maybe I become a zombie. As a person gets involved in meditation, there's at some point there's a wonderful shift where we shift out of discursive thinking, out of analyzing our life through thoughts, thinking about our life through thoughts, our images that we create, trying to fix our life through thoughts, plan our lives through thoughts, have conversations in our heads, people come up with better rejoinders that we'd have to have. This whole world of thinking that's been churned away can be brought to a rest. It doesn't mean that thinking stops entirely, but discursive thinking comes to a stop. And as it does, it's the present moment becomes more richer, because what keeps us from the richness and the fullness of the present moment tends to be our involvement in these discursive thoughts. If you're preoccupied with the past, you're not really here for the present. If you're caught up in the future, you're not really here for the present. And as the discursive thoughts kind of settle down, the mind becomes clearer and more peaceful. And it's very, very satisfying. Perhaps as satisfying as it is to be able to kind of float in a pool of water and just rest there and be supported. It's a beautiful experience to have this drop away. And if you have an experience of this happening, that gives a different reference point for understanding the world of discursive thought, of thinking. If the only thing you know is thinking and solving and figuring out your life through thinking, then why would you stop thinking if that's going to be the solution? But if you realize there's a whole other way of being, then it gives you more options. You can think actively when it's useful and helpful and pleasant, or you can switch and settle the thinking mind, bring it to a rest. And letting it come to rest is very helpful. And one of the discoveries that some people have when they start meditating and they start looking at their own mind is they realize that their mind is exhausted. There's been, decades of, for some people, decades of stressful kind of thinking, concerns, worries, that it's churning away, and we don't really see the stress or the exhaustion that's there, the weariness that's there, because we're blinded by what we're thinking about. We're thinking about what we're afraid of. We're thinking about what we really want. We're thinking about what we're aversive to. We're thinking about what happened to us in the past. We're thinking about something. And so the mind is focusing on the story and the ideas, what the aboutness. And it can be so intense that we don't, it's like if my hand is the thinking mind, I'm so focused on what it is I want to grab onto, I don't notice that it's tiring to be grabbing, to be reaching. So as we settle down in meditation and start seeing what's here, we start turning away from what the mind is trying to grab onto, and start noticing what actually is here. And if it's tired and exhausted, then we can see that. And rather than being discouraged by seeing that, we should be really encouraged, because it's only by seeing it well that it can allow it to rest and relax. So one of the very important movements in mindfulness meditation is the movement away from grabbing onto our thoughts, our concerns, our likes and dislikes. Not because they're bad, we shouldn't do that, all the time, but rather we turn away from that so we can see more clearly what's going on. So if my open hand is the attention, and my open hand is reaching for something to grab, it's very limited what I can see. But if I take my open hand, if my own hand is in my eyes, and turn it around and really look back at my arm, at my body, I can see really what's going on here. So when we do a meditation, there has to be a certain wisdom present for the process. And one of the pieces of understanding that's necessary is that meditation is not found by staying involved in our preoccupations. We're not thinking our way to solve our problems. the world of thinking is not the solution when we meditate. So there has to be some, at least understanding that the process is to release the mind from thinking so something else can happen. And that something else is paying careful attention to what is happening here and now. So to turn away, if you're thinking about the future, realize future thinking is not meditation. Being aware, clearly aware you're thinking about the future, that is mindfulness meditation. Thinking about the past and gripping onto the past, that's not mindfulness. But stepping back, opening up the eyes of awareness to see what's happening now, and seeing, oh, I'm thinking about the past, that's mindfulness. So you don't have to get rid of thinking about the future, thinking about the past, but you have to step back to see and feel, this is what's happening now. And there's a huge world of difference between being involved or caught up or consumed by the past, the future, by fantasy, versus stepping back and seeing, oh, this is what's happening now. So a big part of mindfulness is this willingness to step back and say, what's happening now? Being willing to, at least for a moment, to entertain the possibility that I don't have to be involved in those thoughts, no matter how important they are. And the mind is very tenacious. Sometimes it's said to be have all these tricks, the thinking mind, that it uses to keep you involved in thinking. And it'll come up with all kinds of juicy things that seem so important to think about right now. And in order to meditate successfully, there has to be at least the understanding that that's not what a meditation is, not thinking about things. It's not easy to separate yourself from it, but let's begin by realizing that's not what we're doing for this particular session, these 30 minutes that I'm meditating. It's a different process. And it's such a radically different process that it can seem foreign to someone who's never swum before, someone who's never kind of discovered kind of resting in a non-discursive awareness. There's really kind of a shift that happens in the mind. So that's my introduction. So today's topic is mindfulness of thinking. So for those of you who maybe missed earlier parts of the series, in the first week I gave an introduction to mindfulness, and I talked about mindfulness and the breathing being kind of an anchor to the present moment, anchor to being present. And then mindfulness of the body, how to bring attention to our physical embodied experience. Last week was how to bring mindfulness to emotions, feelings, mind states. And today the topic is how to bring mindfulness to thinking. It's very common in meditation circles for people to have a little bit, sometimes a little bit, sometimes very much, antagonistic relationship to their thinking. Because that gripping onto thoughts really makes it hard to be mindful, hard to meditate. People often want to push away their thinking and stop thinking entirely. What we're trying to do with mindfulness is not necessarily get rid of thinking, but not to be in its grip. And the way to do that is to clearly include mindfulness as part of the meditation, to be mindful of the fact we're thinking. So we don't have an antagonistic relationship to thinking. We don't say that your thoughts are distractions unless you get distracted by them, if you get lost by them. But if you can see it, oh, I'm thinking, then you're not distracted. You see what's going on. And if you clearly see that you're thinking, you don't have to add on top of that judgments, I shouldn't be thinking, it should be different, this is the wrong thing to think. It just trust the tremendous power of seeing, of knowing what's happening as it's happening. Oh, I'm thinking right now. Oh, look at that. As opposed to wrapped up in it. So we're going to do a meditation now, and I'm going to, it's going to be somewhat of a guided meditation, and I'm going to do a guided meditation of an exploration of the world of thinking. And as I do this, realize that This is not exactly the instructions that you're supposed to follow, but this is a exercise to kind of show you the terrain, the territory of thinking, so that when you hear the instructions for mindfulness of thinking, you'll have a better sense of how to do it. So, put yourself in a comfortable and alert posture. Sitting up a little bit straighter than you normally would. And if you're really tired, sit up even straighter. And then gently close your eyes. So first we'll just do a few minutes of settling in and arriving here. So it can be helpful to begin by taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. As you breathe in deeply, feel your rib cage stretch, expand. Maybe if it's even feels really some pleasantness, it's pleasure involved in that kind of stretching, that massage of breathing in deeply. And then as you exhale, relax. Soften your body as you exhale. Stay upright, but soften. As you exhale, settle in to this place where you're sitting. Settle into your body, here and now. And then letting your breath return to normal. Take another few minutes to scan your body, to notice what's happening in your body, and if there's any tension or holding that might be easy to soften or relax, soften perhaps the shoulders, the muscles of the eyes, the forehead, the jaw. The belly. And letting yourself be at ease, bring your attention into your breathing. Feeling the experience of breathing in your body. You only ever breathe in the present moment. And if you let there be a living connection between awareness and breathing, then your awareness is also in the present moment. letting go of your thoughts and concerns. And just for a couple of minutes here, enter into the experience of breathing. We're not going to do it for very long, but just kind of let yourself be rocked by your breathing. So now, let go of the awareness of breathing. Stop paying attention to the breathing. And instead, become aware, mindful of thinking. No need to stop your thinking or let go of it. But rather, get to know that you're thinking as you're thinking. Or if you have images that occur, just really clearly know that you're having these images, you're seeing images as they occur. So look your thinking right in the eye. See it for what it is. If the thinking goes away, then go back to your breathing until thinking starts up again. And then don't let go of your thoughts. Just turn and recognize that it's happening. Allow it to happen. And then in a relaxed way, as you're aware of yourself thinking, whenever you're aware of yourself thinking, notice what the tone of the inner voice is that's doing the thinking. Kind of like you're listening to someone speak and you can hear the tone of their voice. What's the tone of that inner voice that thinks? Is it loud or soft? Gentle or harsh? Kind or critical? Insistent or tentative? Instead of noticing what you're thinking about, notice the character or the quality of the thinking itself or the image making itself. Notice how much energy there is in thinking. Is it very weak, your thinking, or is it very strong? Can you notice if there's a strong pull that pulls you into the world of thinking? Or is there a strong interest in you, in whatever you're thinking about? Is your thinking rapid, rapid fire, one thought after the other? Or is it slow, spacious? And if you think in words, if there's an inner voice that does a thinking, is there a location where the inner voice resides or where the speakers that project the voice are? Or does the voice occur in some kind of without location? Or if there are images, is there a screen? Is there a place where the screen, where the images are projected? Or do the images occur in no location? And then letting yourself see if you can be more sensitive. And can you see if there's any place in your body, physical place, that's activated by your thinking? If people think really hard, their brow furrows up, jaws tighten, neck and shoulders can tighten, belly can tighten. There can be a lot of pressure perhaps someplace in the skull, tightness somewhere. Is there any pressure or tension or tightness anywhere in your system associated with thinking? And as if the thinking mind is a muscle, on the next exhale, see if you can relax that muscle, soften the thinking mind. Come back again to your breathing. Feel what it's like to inhale. Feel what it's like to exhale. And for the next 2 or 3 minutes, stay with your breathing the best you can. But be attentive for when the mind wanders off into thinking. And when it does, step back, name it as thinking. Recognize it, thinking. And then go back into your breathing. And then to end the session, you might take a few long, slow, deep breaths, feeling your body. And then, when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So one of the things I was trying to do, convey in that exercise, was the idea that your thinking can be an object of attention. You can actually notice that you're thinking while you're thinking. And in terms of meditation practice, what's important is not the content of thinking, but rather the process of thinking. And there's a shift in mindfulness where we shift away from the content of what we're thinking about to noticing the process of thinking that's going on. So for example, if you overhear somebody, two people speaking, two strangers, they're talking about something really juicy, you know, you probably lean in a little bit and kind of, wow, that's really fascinating, and you're kind of, where is this? I don't want to leave because your bus is going to go, but you don't want to get on the bus because they're about to get to this climax of this great piece of slander or something. But if they were speaking, so you're really interested in the content, but if they were speaking a language you didn't speak, you didn't have a clue what they were saying, you wouldn't know the great story they were telling, but you would hear something else about them. You'd hear the tone, perhaps, of their voice. They're angry, or they're humorous, or they're kind, or something. You can tell if they're loud, they're soft, they're in a hurry, they're relaxed, taking it easy. You can notice a lot about the process of their thinking that you wouldn't notice, perhaps, if you were caught up in the content of what they're trying to say. So in mindfulness, there's a shift, we say, away from content to noticing the process. One of the advantages of that is that you're less likely to stay caught and involved in the content if you step back and look at the process. If you stay looking at the content, you might get pulled into the world of content and think more about it. So the exercise I gave was an attempt to kind of step back a little bit to show you that there's a variety of things you can notice about thinking that's not about the content. None of the questions I asked you to notice had anything to do about the content per se. So I'm curious to hear from some of you what that was like to bring your attention to thinking, to keep it on thoughts in such a sustained way for about 10 minutes or so, and to look at it from the different perspectives that I offered. What happened for you, and what did you discover? What did you notice? Yes, if you can take the mic here. And the green light should be on.
Okay. I think, mostly I was very frightened by the process of thinking. So I'm clearly always caught up in thinking, always. And so I was really shocked at the different ways, the different processes. There were some that were like the whack-a-mole thoughts. And then there were kind, there were just like always there, like waves of things coming in. So I think it's the first time that I've ever been quiet enough to recognize my thinking processes. And then I started realizing, you know, then I'm like, this might be a therapy question, but, you know, it's like, what happens when there are no thoughts going on? It's like, you know, the big void of nothing going on in my brain. And so that was a little frightening, but I have a lot to think about tonight, for sure.
And I'll figure it all out tonight, and then I'll tell you tomorrow.
Thank you. It's not uncommon for people to get frightened at the prospect of not being involved in their thinking so much. because the thinking is how we orient ourselves many times to the world, to ourselves, and make ourselves safe. For it's a familiar world. And if that familiar world, that safe-making world, kind of stops, then is it safe? And of course it is. But the mind doesn't know that yet. Yes, please.
I found it interesting that there were several thoughts, especially sort of speculative thoughts, gee, I wonder what'll happen if, or whatnot, that when I paid attention to the thinking, they just sort of retreated. But then when I sort of, you know, went back to the breath, man, they'd just come right back. And then I pay attention to them, and they go away, and then they just come right back.
Great. I make a distinction between thinking and thoughting. And thoughting is what the mind does. The mind is a little thoughting machine. Thinking is when we get involved in that thought and feed it. And thoughts only continue as thinking, continue through time, like one train of thought, if we're involved in it, if we're interested in it, or somehow caught up in it, or so doing something with it. If the mindfulness is strong enough, and for different kinds of thinking it needs to be strong enough, you step back from feeding the thinking, and it can return to thoughting. And if it's just a thought just arises, and it vanishes. And so if you just clearly know that you're thinking while you're thinking, the energy to sustain it dissipates, and it just kind of falls away. That generally happens if the thinking is not that strong. You know, if it's really strong, then you know, it's not going to dissipate so easily. Thank you.
I found that when I focused on the breath, I was able to note that if I'm focusing on my breath, then I can be more mindful and not let my mind drift off. But once I stopped focusing on my breath, it was like all of a sudden I would realize after the fact my mind has been straying for the last, you know, 1 or 2 minutes, and I would be coming back. So should I just stay focused on my breath? And as a way of forcing myself, almost not forcing myself, but as a way of trying to be mindful. Because otherwise, it's almost like I realize after the fact, oh, where have I been for the last 2 minutes? My mind is just taken over, and I'm deep in thought, and then I say, oh, I've just lost more time, and et cetera.
If you're getting lost in thought, and so minutes go away, and you're kind of lost in some thought world, that's when the breath is really useful. That's why I call it an anchor to the present moment. And just come back and be with the breath. Be really simple, come back to the breath. And generally, the concentration builds, the stability in the breath increases, which means we're more stably in the present. And also the energy for thinking begins to dissipate. The attachment to thinking begins to soften a little bit. And so the thinking mind calms down. At some point, if thinking mind gets calm enough, then that's when you can turn around and look at thinking directly and not get swept away by it. But at this point, for you, it sounds like you're so wrapped up, interested, fascinated, attached to the world of thinking that you get swept so easily away. So as long as you get swept away that way, then come back and use the, tether your boat to the breath. There's a mic in the back, so you can...
Thanks. I found that the more I tried to calm down and the more successful I was, the more I was startled by noises. And they would sort of jolt me back up out of where I had been. And I wondered if that's common and if there's
It's common enough. And there's a variety of reasons why that might happen. And I don't want to speculate for you exactly why that happens, but as you continue practicing, generally what happens is you get even more calm, and the loud noises will just kind of go right through you. And But for now, for some reason, it's hitting something that jolts you. But so they at some point, they'll stop being a trouble for you.
I noticed when I was thinking that rather than words or images, I was hearing music a lot of the time. And that music kind of sets a rhythm or a beat, and that is my regular mode of being during the day. So it's pretty fast.
Pretty what fast?
Fast. Yeah, and then that kind of sets the tone for the images and the thoughts that come into my mind.
So it's not uncommon for people to have music going on. Some people have it a lot. Some people it comes intermittently. And it's possible to kind of bring mindfulness to that, and not so much interested in which songs are playing, but rather, again, the deeper aspects of that process. And so to look and see, is it fast, is it slow? But most important, I remember that with music, is there, one of the things to look at is there any emotions connected to it? And sometimes there can be emotions connected to it that's very insightful to see. I don't know about you, sometimes it's just a habit to have the music going. But even sometimes when it is a habit or for other reasons, some people use music to comfort themselves. And as I know some people who had stressful childhoods, the music was what kind of made them feel safe. And so they got the habit of using music to feel comfortable. And one person I knew who was on retreat with me had a lot of music coming. And she looked very carefully at when it occurred in the course of the day. It happened a lot. And she said, it happens every time I'm in a transition. I'm going from one room to another or one activity to another. And every transition is a little bit stressful. It's pretty mild, but just enough. And so the music comes on to comfort me. And so rather than to see that really clearly, for example, that gives the person the opportunity to look at the underlying anxiety, if that's the case, and then bring attention to the anxiety and try to resolve the anxiety, as opposed to keep soothing over the anxiety with the music. So I'm not saying that's your case, but I'm just pointing out that it can be a rich area of exploration to see what's going on. And if you've never done that, the mindfulness can go a long way with that. So maybe one more here out in the outer hall.
So that was... that was really interesting for me and challenging, I think. And my experience was, so when you have a thought, right, you can fall into that trap that probably everybody has fallen into when they were curious about it of, what am I thinking about? I'm thinking about that. Now I'm thinking about that. And it's this sort of silly, infinite regress. And my experience with that was that would happen. And rather than being mindful of the thought, that would just drown the thought out. And then you get into that regress. And then the thing that brought me out of it was something like music or some physical sensation, right?
Yeah, luckily.
But yeah, right. So I somehow that didn't seem like the point. I mean, that didn't seem like I was getting done or I was doing what you had been talking about doing in your.
As soon as you notice the infinite regress thing going on, just break, jump out of it. Go back to the breath, listen to, connect to something different.
Yeah, so I guess what I was going to ask is, I mean, there's having a thought, right? And then there's noticing a thought, and I couldn't notice it lightly. Ah. But noticing always just smashed it into that regress.
That's a really good thing to see. So your way of noticing is heavy. It's like smashing, you're saying.
The other thing was just the thought passed, kind of, and I didn't feel like I was being mindful at all,
So that's really important to see. So some people have this... sledgehammer approach to mindfulness. They're going to, they're going to just, attack whatever they're noticing. Some people have this like hesitant approach, like, I don't want to get close. And is it okay to look, and there's all these attitudes that can built into how we're mindful. And you saw something very important there. And it gives you the opportunity perhaps to begin finding a way to soften up, to lighten up, and to know something much more in a lighter way, easier way. Oh, look, I'm thinking. As opposed to, boom, I'm thinking, and I'm going to smash the poor thing to smithereens. So thinking is a very important part of human life. And we're not supposed to, you know, do away with it entirely. But we want to have more wisdom and understanding how it works. And as we learn how to work with thinking and meditation, it also translates to having more skill, more wisdom about how to relate to our thinking outside of meditation. Many of the same dynamics that happen in relationship to thinking in meditation are the same dynamics that happen outside. So if you understand what goes on there, it'll translate into probably an improved life, thinking life outside as well. Now, to emphasize a point I made before, the key thing about mindfulness practice is noticing what's happening. It's not about changing what's happening or having a better experience or getting rid of something. It's noticing what is happening. And if you do this practice for some while, you'll notice how incredibly powerful it is to just notice something without getting pulled into its world, without being running away from it, without attacking it, without hiding, without judging it, just kind of noticing it. Until you kind of get a hang of it, it might seem like that's kind of insignificant just to notice something. But to notice something with clarity and without getting caught in something is very different from how the mind usually operates, because the mind is usually operated caught up in things. So we're simply trying to notice what's going on. Because the mind is kind of often kind of busy and caught up, and when we first sit down to meditate, it's usually good to come back to your breathing and use the breathing as some place to stabilize yourself, to relax, to settle in, to kind of explore and develop that mindfulness and concentration that keeps you here. And if that's all you do for months and months, just focus on the breath, focus on the breath, it's time well spent. But mindfulness practice is not limited in just focusing on the breath, because what we're trying to do is to learn how to have a productive, useful attention that can be attentive to all aspects of our human experience. Because then you can bring attention to all aspects of our human experience. One of the very happy moments for me in my whole monastic life, that was to happen in the monastery, didn't have to happen there, but that's where it happened for me, was I was practicing mindfulness on retreat, and I suddenly realized that no matter what I experience, I could be mindful of. And that made me really happy. Because if I could be mindful of it, I could be free. And if I could, then I could be free in any circumstance, any situation where I had awareness of what was going on, whatever that experience was, I could be free. It just made me so much joy. So we're not trying to, you know, so to learn how to bring mindfulness to everything that we do is really the task of mindfulness. So we start with the breath, and then sooner or later the body will speak up, make itself well known to you. And when the body makes itself well known, it's compelling, then we do meditation on the body. So we bring our attention to that part of the body that's compelling, the sensations. If it's an emotion that's quite compelling, we bring attention to there. So the same idea applies to thinking. That if thinking becomes compelling, we do mindfulness of thinking. There's no need to judge yourself. Oh, sometimes judgment, oh, I shouldn't be thinking. This is bad. I'm a bad meditator because I'm thinking. If you're noticing you're thinking, that is good meditation. That's that simple. A lot of people, right away after they notice they're thinking, add judgments on top of it. We try to keep it really simple and don't judge. Just notice. Now, if your thinking is really lightweight thinking, just kind of random, superficial kinds of thoughts, the best thing to do is just let go and come back to the breath. You're caught up in some light thing, you know, come back to the breath. If it's not easy to let go of your thoughts, then they deserve more careful attention. And so then you want to actually kind of, in a clear way, bring your attention to clearly look that thinking right in the eyes. Thinking, I see you. Just really acknowledge I'm thinking. So I'm really clear. So you might say to yourself, thinking, thinking. Sometimes that very subtle, soft, soft, soft little naming the experience, thinking, acknowledges it more fully. And that acknowledgement might be enough for it to go away and for our interest in it, whatever, to dissipate. And then it's easier to come back to the breath and you stay with the breath. Sometimes your thinking is even stronger than that. And so you note it, you acknowledge it, thinking, you see it for what it is, it doesn't dissipate. So then what we do is just stay noticing it. It's the thing that's happening. It's strong, it's compelling, what's going on? We notice thinking. And then it becomes important, since we're going to stay with it for a while, noticing the phenomena, then it's important to start noticing something different than the content. And so then you can kind of feel your way into what else is going on here. Chances are that if it's compelling you're thinking a lot, chances are that there's a fair amount of energy there. Chances are that there is some emotion that's connected to it. So one of the important things to notice is there an emotion, some feeling tone in and amongst that thinking? So for example, people who plan a lot, chances are very high, a high percentage of planning thoughts have anxiety as part of it. Sometimes it can be excitement, happy excitement about something coming up. Someone could be thinking a lot about some difficulty in the past, and the emotion that seems connected to those thoughts might be resentment, or might be hurt, or sadness. There might be fantasy going on. And so that fantasy is just, it might be the most glorious, fantasy ever. The thing that's kind of really part of it might be desire, or it might be insecurity, or fear, and we're trying to cover up or kind of compensate for it. Or there might be self-identity issues involved. I remember sitting and meditating and having amazing fantasies that were basically delusions of grandeur. And because, it made me feel pretty good about myself. And so that kind of whole insecurity and wanting to build myself up was part of that thinking. So to notice what else is going on, and in particular, is there an emotion connected to the thinking? And if there is, then bring your attention to the emotional side. If there's a thinking going on, and you note it, thinking, and it goes away, you go back to your breath. And the same kind of thought appears again. So you're planning. It's a lightweight planning, so you note it, planning goes away, you go back to your breath. Breath and a half later, you're planning again. You note planning, you come back. Then if you keep noticing it coming back to the same theme over and over again, chances are, is there some kind of emotion underlying it that's giving fuel to that repetitive thought? So it might be anxiety if it's planning. So then what we do is that we do anxiety meditation in the way that I gave instructions last week. You would note anxiety and really feel it and be present for that. And you'd notice, where is that in the body? If you're planning because you're happily excited about what's coming up, then you'd notice what happy is like. And you'd feel that in your body. And if you feel the emotion that's going on, then you might not need to think so much. Because often thinking, repetitive thinking, is really a symptom of something deeper that needs our attention. And so rather than focusing on the symptom, we want to focus more at the cause that's underlying it. So one of the ways is to look, drop down and feel what's happening there. Sometimes it's energetic. You can feel all this energy, or you can feel all this physicality. There's always a physical, surprisingly enough, there's always a physical side to thinking. If the thinking is really, really subtle and quiet and peaceful, you have to have a very, very subtly quiet mind to see that very, subtle physical kind of aspects to it. If you just rob the local bank the physical sides of thinking is going to be pretty obvious if you can manage to pay attention to it. It's pretty loud in there, and the tension and pressure. But it's very interesting if you find yourself thinking a lot, you're very agitated in your thoughts and spinning out a lot, is to notice if there's any kind of pressure or tension or tightness somewhere, somewhere in the skull area, under the skull, inside, or forehead, or somewhere. Because if there is pressure or tension, physical pressure or tension connected to thinking, and you let go of your thoughts, but the pressure remains, that pressure is like a factory ready to pump out a new thought. And so you wonder, why is it, I let go of that thought, why is it coming back? Well, the pressure is there. And so what is very helpful to do then is to notice, is there any physical manifestation, physical corollary, characteristic of this thinking phenomena? And if there is pressure or tension, whatever, see if you can relax it. If you can't relax it, then do mindfulness of the body. Just go and just feel, explore, be present for that tension. As you're aware of all these things, whether it's thinking, insistent thinking, it's emotions, it's physical pressure, be on the lookout, be careful that you don't start judging any of it. You don't get in an aversive relationship to it. It's okay, it's all okay. You're just asked to notice what's going on. Notice, oh, this is how it is now. This is how it is now. And one of the reasons why mindfulness meditation can be relaxing is because we're just relying on noticing. It's all okay. You don't have to be at war with yourself. You don't have to be at war with what's going on. You don't have to try to hold on to anything. You don't have to make yourself into a Buddhist saint by sitting here. You can just notice what's happening in a very simple way. And that experience of simple awareness, simple presence for what is actually quite a radical thing to do. So if thinking is superficial and kind of lightweight, just let go of it and come back to your breath. If it's more insistent, turn your attention and really notice it, really acknowledge it. It's often useful to use a label, thinking. If without thinking, it's really obvious what kind of thinking it is, it can be helpful to label as planning, remembering, or fantasy. But don't think about what the right label is, only if it's obvious. And then if it stays insistent or is really repetitive, then do a deeper exploration of what's going on with thinking. And it's fascinating. It can be fascinating to explore what's deeper. It's not the discursive part, not the content, not why you're thinking what you're doing. Not, why did I do, and why did I rob that bank, and what is actually happening here and now? And you'll find if you explore that, you'll begin discovering depths of what makes you operate as a human being. What's underneath the surface of kind of the, you start seeing the operating system of who you are. The emotions, the feelings, the beliefs that keep it all going. So to feel the process and understand more deeply what that is. And when thinking is no longer compelling, then go back to the breathing. You don't need to stop thinking in order to meditate. If your thinking is in the background, in the foreground, you can stay with your breathing. Just ignore the background. It's when the background pushes itself into the foreground that you need to be concerned. So as long as you stay with your breath, and there's things kind of going on thinking-wise in the background, don't judge yourself as, oh, I'm thinking, I shouldn't be thinking. Just let it stay there in the background. But when you get caught in it, or it pushes itself in the foreground, that's when we need to be mindful of it. Make sense? So now it's your turn. Now please ask for clarification. If any of that didn't make sense to you, I'd love to be able to try to clarify it.
I'm very intrigued because I have found thinking to be very pleasurable when I'm really just speeding and feel like my thinking process is very clear. And also, another great pleasure to me has basically been mindlessness, if you know what I mean, when you're just sort of on a roll, either through humor or dialogue or whatever, and an hour passes or something. So I guess what I'm wondering is, if you're talking about feeling choice in the matter rather than saying give up things.
Oh, yes. I don't want to leave you with any impression that you're supposed to leave here tonight and never think again. or the goal here is to be a person that doesn't go around thinking, you know. Thinking is a beautiful thing to do. And I'm very friendly. I have a very friendly relationship, a very appreciative relationship to my thinking. And I hope, you know, I think it's a very, very, very helpful tool. I find it very useful to contemplate things, go for walks and think. I have sometimes wonderful creative bouts with my thinking that go on. And it's sometimes quite beautiful to think. And sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it's like, what? Leave me alone. And so as we understand the territory better, there is more choice. And this choice, if you have enough freedom, you can choose what you think about. You can, that's not useful, I'll think about something else. And that's, you know, it's pretty easy to switch. Or you can know, is this the right time? You have this beautiful, juicy, creative, fast kind of thinking going on. But you're supposed to be, you know, doing your taxes. Or you're supposed to be, you know, whatever. This is the wrong time for that kind of thinking. So if you give free rein to your thinking to do whatever it wants, then you develop a habit of attachment of all. And so it's very powerful, at least in meditation, not to give free rein. So in meditation, you wouldn't give free rein to that creativity. Because you're training yourself, no matter whether it's beautiful or difficult, you're freeing yourself from the content, from that involvement, that attachment, that kind of engagement with it. And in the 30 minutes, you meditate 30 minutes a day, for example, it's only a small percentage of your day, so it's reasonable enough to ask you not to be so caught up in your thinking then. You can think other times. Not much is lost. And if you kind of take into account how repetitive your thinking is, it's probably, you know, you realize that you're not losing much time. But if you, but in meditation, you're learning to become more free and more understanding about what's going on. And that capacity to let go, that capacity to really let go of thinking, helps you then to translate into becoming freer as you go about your daily life. So you have much more choice. So that was a long way of agreeing with you. It's about choice. So it was here happening.
Thank you. So I'm interested in this idea of, I love the idea of learning not to know how not to react to thoughts or to anything. And I like the way it ties into being more tuned into your physiological, to your feelings, to your body and your emotions. What's hard, I feel, is translating this from this nice controlled environment to the real world when somebody says something that you're tempted to react to.
Yes.
Like your husband says something mean.
Oh, those husbands. Those husbands. I know about husbands.
And you find yourself lashing out in reaction. So I keep thinking, why am I not learning, like, immediately how to translate this practice into being non-reactive? I suppose it takes a lifetime.
Oh yeah, it takes a lifetime. But you know, how long have you been doing this now?
This is my fourth time.
Yeah. It's really big just to learn these principles, learn this possibility. That itself is a huge step. And then it takes a while to get the hang of it, to learn. And there's a lot of things you're going to learn in the process. First, you're going to be able to understand yourself better, what goes on, what makes you tick, how all this stuff operates. The other is you're going to develop a stronger mind, a mind that's stronger, has more strength in being mindful, more strength in being concentrated, and stronger in being able to let go. So the combination of those four, self-understanding, mindfulness, concentration, letting go, is really the tools for doing all this. If you want to add a fifth, just so you'd be complete, is a training in kindness. And that's a very important part of Buddhism, is we train in kindness as well. So you can be kind as you go through all this. And if you want to add another, patience. Without patience, this process is not going to work. And so you have to kind of, it takes a while. And so, you know, if you want to lift a 100-pound weight, you don't start by the 100-pound weight, you start by the 1-pound weight and kind of work your way up slowly over time. So it takes a while. It takes practice. We call it a practice. It's a training that we do. And you have to really give it time. And it might take, after some time, some months, I suspect you'll start seeing, perhaps first in small steps, small areas of your life, the difference it makes. And there's a lot of people who come and tell me how much difference this practice has made for them, because they're no longer so anxious, no longer so afraid, no longer so angry, and they're much more calm. But it does take its time.
A quick follow-up question is, the idea of tuning into your feelings, and my understanding of it so far is just that once you notice it, in the same way that noticing a thought can help it go away, that is a step toward not reacting and out of anger or whatever it is.
Yes.
And so is the idea just to then sit with it and notice, oh, I'm angry, and then...
Well, if you're meditating, that's the idea. If you're not meditating, then you have to also understand what's appropriate in the context. If your kid is really upset and crying and has, has a big bloody cut, on the knee and it's flowing down, and because they jumped off the railing in some stupid way, it's not the time to sit with your, anger. How could they have done that? It's the time to clean the wound and, fix it, right? So you have to look at the context and what's wise in a particular situation. And hopefully the mindfulness, as you become more mindful, we also become mindful of the situation we're in. And then we can figure out what's needed, what's the right medicine or the right response to this overall situation. And so sometimes it's appropriate to sit with your emotions. Sometimes it's some situations, it's best to just, it's not about you. It's about your kid. So forget about your emotions. You don't count for this time being. The kid's, it's 2:00 in the morning. The kid is 9 months old. The kid is just crying inconsolably. And am I going to get wrapped up about my annoyance and fear about losing my sleep? It's not about me then. But if my wife wakes me up at 2 in the morning, then it might be the time for me to look and be with my, feel what's going on, feel my annoyance. And wait just a minute there. I want some time here alone to feel what's going on. And it's over here.
You talked about noting the voice of the commentator. And I found last week with doing the emotions that I started doing that and realizing that I have a harsh commentator about the emotions. I don't have the same harsh commentator about my thoughts. And it was a lot harder to sit with my feelings last week than the previous 2 weeks. I didn't want to do the extra 5 minutes. I'd make myself sit. And so that was interesting. But do you have some feedback or ideas around
the emotional commentator being harsher than the mental commentator?
Well, first, my first comment is that that's wonderful. You're seeing how this operates for you, how it works for you. That's the big part of the game is just seeing how it works and the differences in different situations. And as you see this more clearly, you'll become wiser and freer in relationship to it. Why is it that you're harsher on emotions? Maybe it has to do with the nature of the emotions. It might have to do with your belief on emotions. It might have to do with your relationship to the emotional part of your life. And so it might be a rich area of exploration. You know, how do you relate to emotions? Were you brought up with a certain attitude towards emotions or towards yourself having emotions? And is that what's the nature of that relationship that's being formed? A lot of that kind of reflection is best done outside of meditation. In meditation, you just want to keep it really simple. And notice what you noticed here, but notice very matter of fact, this is how it is, and not get caught up in analyzing it. And then I want to say a little thing I say often at this class. You know, if someone walked next to me, talking to me as much as I talk to myself, I would ask them to please be quiet. And after a while, my asking might be a little bit more adamant than that. And then if I noticed how repetitive their thoughts were, how repetitive their talking was, I'd begin wondering about them. And certainly after a while, I would get bored. What's really amazing is we can have the same thought, same theme, 500 times, and we're as interested as we were the first time, if we're doing it. If we're hearing someone else say the same thing, we get tired after the second time. But for us, it stays interesting for a long, long time. Why is that? It's a very interesting topic. And I'd like to suggest to you that it might have to do with the degree to which a lot of those thoughts are in one way or the other self-referential. And what is the glue, what's the attraction, what is your connection there, the attachment you have to concerns about me, myself, and mine? And as you're involved, as you do this kind of exploration of thinking, one of the things to feel your way into, not to analyze or think your way into, but to feel your way into, is to feel into, is there some concern about self that you're stuck on, that you're caught up in, that's pushing you, that has some pressure or something around it? And is it possible to feel that tightness of self and perhaps relax it? It's a very, very profound possibility in this whole process here, is to look at that aspect of selfing, the self-referential nature of it all, and how it keeps the whole game going. And then finally, I would like to pass on the most useful advice that I ever received around thinking. It was advice that I heard secondhand, came from a Zen master named Suzuki Roshi. And his advice around thinking was, don't be bothered by your thinking. Especially good in meditation. Don't be bothered by it. Because if you're bothered by it, you stir it up even more. It means you're caught by it, involved, engaged with it. And the metaphor, I don't think I did it here. Did I do the settling the mud in the pond story here? I did already. So this idea that you want to leave the mud alone to settle in the pond. If you're bothered, you have a stick and you're stirring it up. So you want to be mindful of everything, but it works best if you can, if you just let it be simple, don't be bothered by it. Don't react to it. Of course, you will react. and you will be bothered, then don't be bothered by being bothered. Just notice that. Oh, here, this is what it's like to be reactive. This is what it's like to judge my thinking. This is what it's like. Be very simple. The important thing we're doing here is simply noticing what's going on. Keep it so simple. And then notice what happens if you stay the course of just staying in the noticing, staying noticing, staying noticing. And you'll find that it's really a radical, almost revolutionary thing to do, to stay there with the noticing. So enjoy your thinking, or not. And next week we'll do so a little bit, you know, from emotions. In some ways I have this idea that, you know, we get into our emotional life, we're getting into something that's much more close in, more intimate. And then now with thinking, in some ways thinking actually can be less, but also in some ways it's very more intimate, more closer in to who we are. And next week we'll go in closer, deeper still, into something which is really at the very heart or core of who we are, the mindfulness of that. So as you explore this world of thinking, it'll prepare us for next week. And if you didn't pick up the handout, there's a blue handout somewhere on the end of the stage there. Thank you.